Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We begin today's show by continuing our coverage of the Democrats' spending bill. As we told you yesterday, President Biden announced that the 10-year plan has gone from $3.5 trillion to $1.75 trillion. Because of a handful of Democrats, the bill has been significantly reduced. Not one Republican supports the bill. The bill still includes investments in childcare and early childhood education. The child tax credits will be extended. Tax credits will be given to people mostly in the South who have not had access to Medicaid because Republican governors refused to expand Medicaid access. Medicare would be expanded to cover hearing aids, but the provisions to expand dental and vision have been removed. Now, yesterday, based on reports, we read that allowing the federal government to finally renegotiate drug prices for those on Medicare has also been removed. But now, today, according to reports, Speaker Pelosi says that she's going to be working on that. Senator Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada last night said the negotiations are still going on. It's the number one issue I hear about in Nevada, and rightly so. We have to reduce drug costs. So progressives are saying that they're going to still fight for this one. We're also getting word that 12 weeks of paid family leave is out. Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia was one of the key holdouts for that provision and many others, along with Democratic Senator Kyrsten Sinema. Now, progressive House members say they support this bill, but they will not vote on the infrastructure bill until the reconciliation bill passes. Representative Cori Bush said she would like the Senate to first vote on the spending bill to ensure that it will not get watered down. Joining us with the latest is Arthur Delaney, a reporter for HuffPost, where he covers politics, the economy, and this issue. Hi, Arthur. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. So we have the text of the bill. It's 1,400 pages. Have Senators Sinema and Manchin said whether they will vote in favor of this bill?
They have not made that explicit public promise, but they have said they like it. And they have been meeting with House progressives. Yesterday afternoon, I saw Pramila Jayapal, the chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, walking across the Capitol to meet with Kyrsten Sinema in her office. So it's happening. And Jayapal is very optimistic that this will all get done. In fact, all Democrats are pretty optimistic that this will all get done. But the explicit promise from Sinema and Manchin is one of those little details, one of those little question marks that we've still got.
Well, and then Senator Mitt Romney, a Republican who opposes this, tweeted some bizarre meme this morning, biscuits with the boss, where he's handing Kyrsten Sinema a box of biscuits. And then he followed it by saying she's one tough cookie. I mean, she's in this kind of pink dress on an orange couch, and he's bending down and smiling at her. I mean, what message are they sending with this?
That's a you have to have Apple Plus on your TV. And you have to have seen the Apple Plus TV show Ted Lasso, starring Jason Sudeikis, to understand that at all. And if you don't have Apple Plus, it's just gibberish, right? But there, that had nothing to do with Build Back Better. That was just a little Halloween costume, Halloween celebration that the senators were doing. And Kyrsten Sinema loves palling around with Republicans. That's not new. And she also loves wearing bright pink.
Well, it's just very strange timing, given that so much is at stake with this. And a lot of people who don't have those references really took it as kind of a dagger in the gut. Like, hey, we're having fun over here while you guys can't have dental. I mean, that's just the responses that I've seen.
You can't blame anyone for feeling that way. It's totally weird. But I have seen Ted Lasso. So I immediately, Jason Sudeikis, who portrays Ted Lasso, used to do Mitt Romney on Saturday Night Live. So there's like all these layers to that are totally hidden if you don't have Apple TV Plus.
Right. Well, a lot of people don't, and it's just strange timing. So let's talk about, so that's Manchin and Sinema. We don't know where they stand yet. What about progressive House members? Because Pramila Jayapal yesterday on MSNBC said, "We do support the watered down bill, but we will not vote on it until, I'm sorry, we will not vote on the infrastructure bill until the reconciliation bill passes." And as I said in the intro, Representative Cori Bush said she wants the Senate to first vote on the spending bill to ensure that it will not get watered down. So what are you hearing from House progressives?
I have been speaking to these same people, and they are really in control of the situation right now. What happened this week is Nancy Pelosi wanted the House to vote on the bipartisan infrastructure bill that has already passed the Senate and has just been waiting for a House vote since August. And everyone supports that bill, basically, but they don't want to vote on it and then lose leverage over Sinema and Manchin. They're basically holding that bill hostage to make sure that these moderate holdouts vote for the much bigger and more consequential Build Back Better bill that they have hesitated to support and are only now beginning to agree to a real outline of what they would be willing to support. And that the text of that just appeared yesterday afternoon. So because the progressives have been refusing to vote on the infrastructure bill for months, only now do we have the text and the likelihood that both bills will get passed. I mean, I guess it's possible that the House could have agreed to the infrastructure bill a while ago, and then we would still be doing the same Build Back Better negotiation. But what the progressives say, and all of them say this, is that they don't trust Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema. They believe that if they went ahead and passed infrastructure, Manchin and Sinema would say, take a hike on this other bill because it's given them a headache and they don't want to deal with it. So that's the situation. Progressives do seem to be controlling what gets voted on in the House. Pelosi backed off the plan for that vote yesterday. And now they all do seem to agree that they're making progress towards passing both those bills in the coming weeks.
Right, because progressives have enough votes to kill the infrastructure bill if they don't get the reconciliation bill.
Yes, they are a 95-member ideological caucus in the House. That's as big as the moderate caucus, the New Democratic Coalition. And a significant number of the progressives have said they would vote against infrastructure if it came up without Build Back Better. And it only takes three to kill a bill in the House. So that's right. That's where their power comes from.
So, Arthur, what's the time frame now?
So the initially yesterday, Pramila Jayapal said, this framework you've got on Build Back Better sounds great, but we want text. We don't want to have a situation where we're all celebrating an agreement in principle and then we don't like what is actually put down on paper. But then yesterday we got text. And so progressives have also said, well, all right, we'll look through the text, make sure it's cool. We also want some assurance that our holdout senators will actually vote for this. That's why Cori Bush and others said, we want the Senate to pass Build Back Better before we even vote on it. But I don't think that they will necessarily hold out for the Senate vote or not. But they wanted more than just text. They want to be sure they're not going to be left without with Congress not passing Build Back Better. And, you know, Joe Biden and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer, they all said that too. They said that a while ago. And really, progressives are just trying to make sure they stick with what they originally said. Even though Nancy Pelosi was trying to get the separate infrastructure vote this week, they wanted Joe Biden to, like, get some momentum. They think that Democrats looking busy and passing a bill will also maybe help Terry McAuliffe win the governor's race in Virginia.
Today, we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, a reporter for HuffPost, where he's been covering this issue extensively. We're going to stick with this for about 15 more minutes. So if you have any questions or comments about media coverage of the Democrats' spending bill, what are your thoughts about how this has unfolded over the last couple of months? Questions about what's in or what's out? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Arthur, you and your colleagues have done a great job of looking at what's in and what's out. And I first want to ask you about prescription drug pricing reform. As you report, the Democrats have been promising action on drugs since the early 2000s. 80% of the population supports this. If the federal government were allowed to do this, some drug prices would come down by 57 to 75%. So we've been talking about the fact that Kyrsten Sinema has received a lot of money from Big Pharma. They're running ads in favor of her in Arizona. But now we're getting reporting that Speaker Pelosi says she is going to work over the weekend to ensure that this will be in the bill. The AARP slammed the Democrats over this. So what are you hearing?
This is not the only thing that was totally omitted from the draft text they put out yesterday. And it's definitely the case that they're trying to put stuff back in. And I think that the next week or two will be crucial for whether that happens. Frank Pallone, who is a congressman and the Democratic chair of the Energy and Commerce Committee, where the drug pricing policy stuff really lives, he said yesterday, we're going to try to do this. And if we don't do it, it's because pharma has bought off too many members of Congress. It's not just Sinema. It's also a few conservative Democrats who don't want to basically take profits from drug companies. It's really straightforward. The government would save hundreds of billions of dollars. People would have less expensive drugs, and drug companies would have less profits. And that's the whole obstacle. I mean, it's obviously a lot more complicated, the nuts and bolts of it, but that's the big picture dynamic. And there's been all out war with TV ads from drug companies. And I think it comes down to the next few weeks. And if Democrats don't do it, it'll be really something, because they've been promising they'd do this for a long time. And it's one of the most popular things in the bill. And it's also, it's a pay for, you know, it would offset the cost of some of the other stuff. In addition to just being really popular in its own right, it's really useful for budget reasons. And it's a question mark.
You know, this has been a key point of Senator Bernie Sanders for decades. I mean, he's been fighting for this for so long. He even takes people over the border to buy drugs. He pointed out that some people pay $340 for a single vial of insulin that lasts 28 days. When he took people to Canada in 2019, he found that people who need insulin could be paying only a tenth of that price. Again, Arthur, this is so, so popular. And if this were not included, then what? Could that's the other question I've been thinking about. If Joe Manchin, Kyrsten Sinema, and a handful of conservative Dems on the House side are hell-bent on keeping this out, could the Democrats then in 2022, do you think they will run on some of these things that were kept out and say, hey, if you give us a few more, you know, Democrats who are not conservative, we will push this through?
That's a good question. They already run on this, though, and I don't know at what point voters become cynical and stop voting for them for that reason. It's some of the more vulnerable members, you know, the frontliners who are in purplish or reddish districts, who are most desperate for this policy to be enacted, and it's some from bluer districts that resist it. So it's electorally not a good thing for Democrats not to do it. And yet that's what they're faced with, because their majorities in the House and Senate are so tiny.
Yeah, you just reminded me of that piece that ran in the Washington Post. Vulnerable House Dems are worried about what's being left out of Biden's economic package. Some of these Dems who barely won their seats are saying, we cannot go back to our constituents and ask them to vote for us if we do not reduce their drug prices, give them paid family leave. I mean, the list goes on.
Yes, I mean, they would obviously have other stuff in the Build Back Better agenda that they could point to, because the bill, even though it's leaving out some important things that Democrats have campaigned on for like decades, it's still got a lot of stuff in it. It's fair to call it transformative. I mean, the child tax credit, the monthly child allowance by itself, I think is potentially a revolution in the government's relationship towards its citizens. But on prescription drugs, that that really is like the most popular thing in there, according to polls.
Right.
You know, and other popular stuff that they campaigned on that was left out are paid leave. And also, you know, they won Congress back from Republicans saying they're going to reverse the Trump tax cuts. And they're not touching them in this bill, though they have other taxes on the rich. And if they have, you know, if they're not doing a higher tax rate, but they are doing a new billionaire tax, do people take, you know, are voters happy with that? Or do they care that the specific top marginal tax rate is left where Republicans put it in 17? I suspect that they would, you know, if Democrats can accurately say they're taxing the rich, like they promised, that people would be okay with that. But definitely the drug pricing thing, if they don't even get a compromise, that would be a big disappointment.
Well, what about universal paid leave? Your colleague Amanda Turkle had a piece that a lot of people were talking about because the headline says 74-year-old man blocks universal paid leave. It was Senator Joe Manchin. Vicky Schabo with the New America Foundation said, the fact that this one older white gentleman who perhaps has never had to contend with family caregiving or the risk of losing his job or being unable to pay his bills could stand in the way of paid leave for nearly 20 million people every year is shocking and upsetting. Did he say anything about why he opposes this?
He, you know, publicly he has spoken, you know, he made brief comments occasionally about this or that, but he has pointed to just his overriding political philosophy, which is that the government should help people who can't help themselves, like people with disabilities or senior citizens, and everyone else should not look to the government for help. And that's something he said a few times in recent weeks in lieu of answering specific questions about different parts of the bill. And that's it. I mean, Joe Manchin is the reason that paid leave was taken out. Now, senators said they're still working on that with him, and he said that, or he told them that he would examine what other countries do. You know, where the U.S. being the only country that doesn't offer or require companies to provide paid leave for people to deal with their, you know, with raising kids or being sick, and it looks like that piece will really be left out ultimately. I feel like there's more likely to be action on some tax stuff and the prescription drugs. But you know, it's not set in stone. They have a draft and they have a few weeks where lots of it could change.
Right. Today we're speaking with Arthur Delaney, a reporter with HuffPost. We're talking about the Democrats' social spending and climate bill. Let's hear from a caller. Let's go to Michael in Los Altos. Hi, Michael. Thanks for holding.
Sure. Thanks for taking my call. My quick question is this. My understanding is that a number of President Biden's climate provisions have been watered down or removed from the bill. If, in fact, that is the case, presumably because of the objections of Senator Manchin, would it be the case then that more significant action on climate change is basically out of the picture, at least for the remainder of the Biden administration, assuming, of course, the Democrats don't have a windfall in the midterm elections?
Yeah, thank you for that. And we're going to talk more in depth about the climate provisions of the bill in the second half of the show. But Arthur, first off, what's your response?
I think the main thing on climate was supposed to be the Clean Electricity Performance Program that would have been $150 billion to get utilities to turn towards zero carbon power. And that was taken out. The caller is right. But there is a bunch of other stuff that like subsidies for green energy and tax credits that will encourage the use of green energy, like through electric vehicles, that in the aggregate could make up for the loss of that centerpiece program. I think there's one analysis out there saying that they can significantly reduce emissions with these leftover pieces. But if this is the last train leaving the station right now, there's not going to be another big bill next year. And most people don't think Democrats will hold both chambers of Congress in next year's election. If they did, though, like the caller suggested, yeah, you know, they could do all kinds of stuff. But this is the thing to focus on right now.
Right. And that's why I ask, you know, if I guess it's just so hard to explain all this in sound bites, but if the Democrats could go back to their people and say, look, we've got conservative Dems here standing in the way of massive change. If you can bring us five more decent Democrats, we could get this stuff done. But if Republicans take over, I mean, it's game over. Nothing is going to happen because, Arthur, it's kind of gotten lost in this whole story that not one Republican supports any of this. And yet are you in D.C.?
I'm at the Capitol. Yes.
Okay, so you would know so much better than us. Have reporters asked Republicans why they don't support the popular provisions of this bill?
Well, you know what? I am working on a story today about that with respect to one part of Build Back Better, the child tax credit. They only extended it in the latest draft of the bill, they're only going to extend it for 1 year, meaning it will come up this time next year during the election. Democrats actually think this will be advantageous because Republicans don't really have a message on the child tax credit. They occasionally say it's welfare without a work requirement, but they also might say, well, families need support. And they kind of squirm when you say, would you let the $300 per child per month benefit drop dead next December, if that's where Democrats leave it with this bill. So they will be put on the spot over that. But for the most part, they don't get into the specifics. They just call it socialism. And then they talk about critical race theory.
Oh my God.
So they're off doing something else right now while Democrats are fighting amongst themselves. Republicans are just off topic and pursuing their own stories about what's happening in America as their strategy to win next year.
Right. And no question at all about how Medicare would cover hearing aids, but it will not expand to dental and vision. I mean, again, every Republican who's on Medicare will benefit from this. And yet Republicans are not going to be held accountable for voting against this.
Yeah. They have Joe Manchin speaking for them on that. He says, if you're going to add, you can't add stuff to Medicare if Medicare is not solvent into future decades. He says Medicare is going broke. You know, that's what they would say if they're being put on the spot on specific things. But but it's easy for them to just say, the whole thing's socialism. I asked one senator, you know, what do you think of these new Democratic tax ideas to tax billionaires or people with more than $10 million annual income? And they just say, it's terrible. That's it's easy for them to say they don't like it. Because they speak about it in the abstract and they are against tax increases in general in the first place. Like that's a safe space for them. And they will then speak about something else.
Well, Michael, thanks for the question. We're definitely going to talk more about that in just a couple of minutes in our second segment. What about what else is in the bill, Arthur, that is going to really drastically change lives? You talked about the child tax credit. We've had you on a couple times talking about that. Tell us a little bit about universal pre-K.
Universal pre-K. That's a big deal. It's just what it sounds like. It would be a system. It would be grants to states. And I guess states could turn it down if they're Republican and they don't want to. But then it would allow for individual counties or cities within states to take the money. And it would be mixed delivery, meaning it can be formal pre-kindergarten classrooms or it can be Head Start, more like daycare type classrooms. And that's a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal for kids. It's also a big deal for parents who need childcare. It would help parents go to work. There's another piece in there that is similar. It's subsidies for childcare that would cap family costs for paying for childcare at 7% of their annual income. This one, I think, is really complicated to explain because it's got that 7% cap, and then it phases in for a period, over a period of 3 years, and there are different levels of subsidies depending on incomes. But anyway, there's a big childcare subsidy. There's universal pre-kindergarten, And they didn't water those things down at all. The childcare thing actually got a little more generous in its latest iteration in this draft. So those will be major policies.
Great. What about care services for people with disabilities?
That's another big one. There's home care for subsidies for home care for people with disabilities. You know, this would allows more people to live at home instead of having to go live in a congregant care place. And the flip side of this is that it would also change the industry. It would boost pay. You know, home care workers make like $10 an hour or less, and it's not like easy work.
Ugh.
And so it would massively change the way that industry operates for both the people who need help in their homes and the people who provide the help.
Will they get a raise finally?
Yes, I mean that's in the bill. Same goes for childcare.
Oh,
both my. Those provisions are for the clients, but also the caregivers and childcare professionals themselves would get higher wages.
Mm. Okay, that's great. So we're definitely going to do shows about that because this is so needed. I also want to ask you about Medicaid because, Arthur, there have been just devastating stories. The New Yorker had one about women in the South who are not going to the doctor because their Republican governor declined to expand Medicaid eligibility and they're getting a cancer diagnosis way too late. NPR had another devastating story about this. So what's the latest on Medicaid expansion in those states?
There are temporary provisions in here that expand Obamacare subsidies, and there is something, an insurance option for people who live in states that did not expand Medicaid under Obamacare. I'm a little less expert than my colleague Jonathan Cohn on this piece, but they did Medicaid instead of doing the Medicare stuff that Bernie Sanders was the biggest advocate. He wanted for dental care to be added to Medicare. And there was a big debate within the party. Do we do Medicaid and help poor people, help minorities, or do we do Medicare and help seniors who are big voters? And they opted with the former option of helping poor people. And it's a significant policy.
Last question. What are you hearing from Senator Bernie Sanders? Because he's been behind these policies again for decades. He's on a tirade on his Twitter feed right now against Big Pharma. He's got a whole video called End the Greed of Big Pharma. Over the last 20 years, they've spent over $4.5 billion on lobbying. So where does Bernie Sanders stand on all of this right now?
Well, he's been pretty mad this week when, you know, they were scrambling for new tax ideas. He was getting frustrated that Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin seemed to have mutually exclusive demands. He's so mad that the prescription drug negotiation was left out, but it's not over. You know, he could get it in, and he's like that. He's on the same page as Pramila Jayapal and the House Progressives. He still actually thinks the bill is really good, and he said that. It's just that he's got, you know, he wanted to do so much more, and he's still fighting to get more put into the bill, and it is still plausible that he will be able to do that. So he's got two messages. He's yelling at pharma. He wants to put policies back into the bill, but also he thinks the bill is pretty good. You know, $1.75 trillion is a lot, and it's not as much as he wanted to do, but he's going to vote for it ultimately and tout its benefits.
Arthur Delaney is a reporter for the HuffPost, where he's been extensively covering the Democrat spending bill. Arthur, thanks for your reporting and your colleagues, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. Coming up after a quick break, we will talk about what's happening on the climate front. So much is happening. Five young climate activists are still on a hunger strike in front of the White House. They've been there since October 20th. This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. We'll be back after this.